Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions,
episode 562.
Today we hear from Ian, who asks,
in your answer to question 540, Serials in Disguise, or somewhere around there, I couldn't find it exactly, you mentioned that the Cabra Khan ascendancy had accidentally turned into a family saga. You didn't go into any more detail. I have a similar situation where reviving a small private eye novella has turned into 100,000 words of notes for what looks like an immense crime soap opera, and would be fascinated to know how to shape the material.
Oh, the pain. I know this pain well. In my case, originally, and those of you who don't like this series or are bored by listening to authors discuss their past loves may want to skip this episode. Originally, there were two versions of the series. One of them was the one that I dreamt up when I was 15 years old and wrote down in a notebook as notes, about 6 pages of notes, and put on the shelf and never thought of again. Then there was the version that I started writing as a short story in the late 90s, and I got to the end of the short story, and I realized, actually I didn't realize, one of my friends who read it told me that it wasn't a short story, it was the first chapter of a novel. So I said, well, okay, fine, I don't want to write a novel. I'm not good enough to write a novel yet. I don't know if I ever want to write novels. I love short stories. So I'll write a sequel short story. And I wrote another sequel short story. And by the time I was up to 5 short stories, Kitty sat me down and said, shut up and write the book. I'm tired of these cliffhangers. So I shut up and wrote the book. And I got to the end of the book and realized that it wasn't a single book. So I sat down and I planned out a glorious trilogy. And by planned out, I mean I came up with some cool titles and some cool chapter titles because I had no idea where I wanted to go or what I wanted to do. I just had a vague idea that book one was going to deal with the start of the war, book two was going to deal with the war, and book three was going to deal with the end of the war. And I thought I was basically writing a sort of military science fiction spy novel, sort of like Robert Ludlum meets Starship Troopers or something like that, but less pedantic. And that was my vision. That was what I was trying to do. And I wrote through book one, and I got halfway through book two, and it broke because I was writing way beyond my capacity. And I only came back to it because a friend of mine, long after I'd quit writing novels and was just doing screenplays, a friend of mine said, hey, you wrote a novel once, did you? I said, yes, and it sucked. He's like, no, I want to see it anyway. So I said, okay, fine, but I warned you. And he read it, came back to me 3 or 4 days later and said, you're right, it really sucks. But there's an interesting story there. You should give it another go. And I'm like, I read it again just for the hell of it. And I was like, damn it, there is an interesting story there. And I never finished it. Okay, fine. So I sat down and wrote it. And that's what turned into what became Predestination and Other Games of Chance, the podcast novel. And I got all the way through book two, realizing in the middle of book one this time that it was going to be a 5-book series. Because, hey, you know, why do anything halfway? I had enough experience at that point to realize that it was a much bigger story than I thought it was going to be. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I did know where I wanted it to end. And I realized that in order to get from here to there, in the kind of depth and detail I was doing, was going to take 5 books. So with that, I steamed ahead. I got all the way through book two, and I broke down again, and I couldn't figure out why I was breaking down this time. Eventually, I regrouped, and I got into book three, and I realized why I was breaking down. Actually, I didn't. Well, okay. Another writer explained to me why I was breaking down. He said, your problem is that you're writing a single novel, and you're releasing it in segments, And so you're getting to places where you need to go back and seed stuff earlier on, set things up earlier on, so that what you're doing will make sense to your readers. Because otherwise what you're having to do is retcon an info dump as you go, and it's completely screwing up your whole storytelling vibe. And you're not going to be able to finish if you do it this way. And I said, shit. Because it was obvious that he was right. So I dropped progress on book three. I went back and I read books one and two, and I realized that books one and two were actually books two and three. So that's the point at which I pulled everything from the market and decided that I needed to go and write it all as one novel. And as I started writing it all as one novel, I also realized that all the problems I'd had figuring out how to market this thing were because it wasn't a spy thriller and it wasn't MIL-SF. All those years I'd been wrong about what I was writing. I was trying to write a spy thriller and I was trying to write MIL-SF, but I simply wasn't hitting that mark. What I was writing, and it took years to figure this out, was a family saga. I had been writing it all along, and I hadn't realized it. Once I realized it, a whole bunch of other stuff that was wrong with the book suddenly fell into place. And the floodgates opened, and I powered through. I did book one, book two, got halfway through book three before life blew up in all sorts of non-creatively oriented ways, and that's kept me away from that for a little while. But this winter, I swear... This winter, I swear I'm going to finish him. But
I'm tying him to his desk.
Yeah, but that's why I pulled it from the market to put it back on, because it is a book of such length and complexity that I simply could not write it in chunks. I have to write it all in one. I mean, I'm still writing it in chunks, but because nothing is released, I have the freedom to go back and add stuff into book one if I need to set stuff up in book five or book four. So... as far as shaping the material, I'm assuming you're talking about notes for a long, long series. I'm assuming that what you're worried about is maintaining the arc, developing stuff out, and still keeping it satisfying in a way that mystery readers would expect, which is a certain amount of episodicness. That's similar to what I'm doing deliberately in the Clark Lantham books. There is a distinct arc. I may continue to write Lantham books after this arc is done, but there is a deliberate arc I'm going through. Each of the books I'm discovery writing along the way, but there is a through line through all of them that is pre-planned, because there's a particular artistic goal I have in mind with this series. So I'm doing sort of a hybrid approach to that. And when I get toward the end of any of the Clark Lantham books, what I do is I look back and I see, have I laid the metacontinuity in here? Almost always I've done it subconsciously. Once or twice I've had to go back and read and see where the metacontinuity wants to be laid in and lay the pipe. But most of the time, because I've so internalized the story, I know what I'm telling. And so I can just free up and it's like I'm discovery writing it. Check out, we'll link to this in the show notes, check out the episode that we did last month on maintaining arcs over the course of episodic novels and that sort of thing, and that will probably help. The other thing to do is to read some really massive long stories with single continuities. And I know I mention this one a lot, but it is because it was the single biggest influence on the Cobra Khan Ascendancy / the Antithesis Progression. And that's Stephen R. Donaldson's The Gap Cycle. Absolutely brilliant. If you can stomach it, it's extremely dark, but if you can stomach it, it is so brilliant in terms of its epic metacontinuity and hitting all the points that a really vast space opera family drama should hit. And along those same lines, I recommended this for the space opera episode a couple of days ago. Babylon 5 as well is a good one to look at, because that does the same kind of thing. And those are both in science fiction, though. I'm trying to think, is there anything in mystery that does that? And you know, I'm sure there must be, but I don't have any off the top of my head. The Hieronymus Bosch series by Michael Connelly has a metacontinuity to it, but it's not particularly important. The Blackjack Justice and the Red Panda series by Greg Taylor, especially the Red Panda series, much more the thing. And those are technically mysteries, even though they're also technically superheroes, because it's a Batman Green Hornet-like superhero who's basically a detective in a cape. So that would be another place to look. Listen through to the Red Panda if you like Greg Taylor's stuff. They're loads of fun. Other than that, I would love to hear from anybody listening recommendations on mystery series that have that kind of strong, epic metacontinuity to them, where you get a mystery that is multiple books in length with a single story all the way through. If you have read that kind of thing, I would love to hear about it, because it's right up my street, and obviously Ian is looking to pull off that kind of epic feat himself. So please do send it in, and we'll have future feedback episodes on this topic. Thank you very much for the question.
Well, don't stop yet. There's another angle to this question. Just interpreting it absolutely literally, how do you blow up a small short story into an epic soap opera type of thing?
Mm.
From the small to the big.
Oh, okay. Wow, this is something that everybody does and not a lot of people talk about. I don't know if I've ever heard anyone talk about this explicitly. A lot of writers have expanded short stories to novel length or longer. 2001 was originally a short story that became a novel that became a series. There's a whole bunch of other things like that. Jeez, that's a good question. What are some of the techniques involved in doing that? The first is to scale the stakes up. More commonly, to iterate them out if you want to use the short story as a sort of starting point. Instead of ending the short story with the resolution of the original problem, you would change the ending of the existing short story so that the resolution that appears to be coming not only doesn't resolve it, but peels the curtain back and shows you a whole new landscape you hadn't previously dreamt of. Alternately, you could pile complications on so that the resolution of the original problem creates a whole set of new problems. And alternately, again, you could delay the resolution of the problem because, Raymond Chandler style, the protagonist has to go on this long, circuitous journey that has absolutely nothing to do with the original problem. Actually, the parody of Raymond Chandler illustrates this point so perfectly. Think of The Big Lebowski. The Big Lebowski is a parody of The Big Sleep, the Raymond Chandler novel The Big Sleep. There's a one-to-one correlation on many of the plot points. You've got the pornographer that's supposed to know where the missing person is. You've got the reclusive, wheelchair-bound millionaire who's got problems with the women in his household. You've got his daughter who seduces the detective. It's a one-to-one ripoff of The Big Sleep. But in satirizing the Raymond Chandler mystery, it allows you to see the structure that Chandler used for all his novels. Except for Farewell, My Lovely, I think, where the initial problem has almost nothing to do with the plot. Eventually, you circle back around and solve the initial problem, but only incidentally. In this case, someone mistakes the dude for the Big Lebowski, pisses on his rug. The dude wants his rug back because it really ties the room together. So he goes to the Big Lebowski and demands that he replace his rug because nobody would have pissed on his rug if the Big Lebowski's wife hadn't pissed off a loan shark, or a pornographer in this case. Pornographer, loan shark, eh, it's LA, they're the same thing. And the Big Lebowski throws him out on his ass, but everybody else wants a piece of him. And he gets tied up in a kidnapping murder plot and a ransom plot, goes all over the San Fernando Valley, all over Los Angeles, gets involved in all sorts of crazy stuff, winds up having someone trick him into fathering a child, runs into a bunch of other detectives that are following him around for no particularly interesting reason. What we think is the initial mystery that precipitates the whole adventure turns out to be not what it was presented as in the first place, and all through the case, he completely fails to get his rug back. Every time he gets his rug back, it gets stolen from him again. The only thing he cares about is the damn rug, and he can't solve the rug thing, and he keeps getting sucked into all these other heists that have nothing whatsoever to do with the rug, or indeed anything at all. And then at the end, he doesn't even get the rug, which is rather like The Long Goodbye rather than like The Big Sleep, but hey. At the end, he doesn't even get the rug, and he's gone on this amazingly pointless journey to not get the rug. And yet, at every stage, it is completely riveting. And at the end, it's really satisfying, because though he doesn't get the rug, he does restore equilibrium in his universe, which is the real problem that he's trying to solve. The rug is a symbol for this problem, but it's not the problem itself. So that kind of approach where you keep swapping out the stakes in turn for bigger or more frustrating stakes, whether they are relevant or not, blows the universe out and lets you move from a short story to a novel or to an epic. Epic in this case being an epic length, you know, multi-volume single story series. So I think all of your mileage, really all of your mileage, is going to be in blowing the stakes out of the end, playing some bait and switch with your audience about what's actually the issue that your protagonist is trying to solve, letting him discover that things aren't what they appeared to be, and letting yourself take that initial set of problems that you had in that original novella and throw them out the window in a way that opens the book rather than closes them. The trick to doing this over a long story is to resist the urge to resolve things. It is an overwhelming urge, especially if you go too far down the road to resolving things and you get at the end and you feel like you've got to create new tension to keep things going. Then you get stuff like happened all the time on Lost, which was, much as I liked many parts of that series, the interpersonal drama on Lost was a complete joke. Because the writers quite clearly kept trying to resolve things and then realizing, oh no, we've got more episodes to fill. And you can tell because people start acting out of character and it's terrible. Testament to the quality of the acting and some of the other storytelling elements that were in play that it was still a riveting story. But it was super weak on that point. You want to resist the urge to close down your resolutions. You can let the audience think you're going to, but you can't let yourself think that this is going to resolve things. Only close a storyline in order to open a new one. Don't jerk your audience around because you've gone too far down the mental path to closing things off. The real trick at the base of all of it is to keep the plate spinning. Keep the tension going. Keep the stakes going. Do not solve your character's problems or let them solve their own until the very, very end. Okay, well, I think that one does it. I think I've covered that from all possible angles, but if I didn't, let me know, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.